Jack Daniel's whiskey at 1.5 is how the folks round here have been living their lives. Waking and baking every morning at 8, make it to work, they're always late, living by the job, paying their dues.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning, 34 minutes after the hour. Join us on the line now, but this time every week we are honored to be joined by State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing well. Glad to be back in the district after a busy week.
Well, let's kick it off here. Besides dodging shell casings up in a parking lot up in Montgomery, I guess not a typical busy off season. Probably because what there's the election. You don't know what the legislature is going to look like in the new quadrennium totally just yet. But what are some things going on in these types of years right before you get a new body set?
Well, still lots going on this week. We had a pretty big Joint Transportation Committee meeting. And then, of course, you know, still conversations going on about the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project and how it's, maturing, if you will, moving along. And then, of course, you know, still transportation issues down here in the south end of the county that we deal with. And then, of course, you know, the ARPA funding continues to be a conversation that we're focused on, what, you know, how that's going to be spent, what the Treasury guidance is going to look like, how restrictive it may or may not be, and how that's going to move forward. Because all of that's going to hit pretty quickly as soon as we do get back into session. I always like to say that it's an off season, but that's when you do a lot of your hard work so that you're ready to hit the ground running when we actually did get in session. I think a lot of those decisions are going to be made early on, well before we actually get back on the floor.
Do we have any sense of what is there any preliminary guidelines or anything to give you a sense that why would guidance be different this time around with ARPA than it was last time?
Well, one of the things that we know off the bat is that the revenue replacement portion of it is probably going to be non-existent. So we're not going to see the ability to spend a portion of this as freely as we were in the first tranche of the ARPA funding, most of which, as your listeners will know, we spent on prisons. So you won't see that that latitude there. The interesting thing that's really going to come into play is the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the Biden infrastructure plan that was passed, which has a very little to do with infrastructure, but it has some. And what we need to be careful of there is making sure that we don't spend in one category that we could have spent in the other, right? We want to make sure that we are wise in using the least restrictive monies in with the most latitude in the right places and the most restrictive money in places where we were going to spend it anyway. So those are the types of conversations that will have to take place as it relates to the ARPA funding as a whole.
Well, tax relief doesn't seem to be a part of that discussion. That if you got to do it, it sounds to me like it'll come from somewhere else if there is any.
I think you're probably right. There's still conversations about a tax rebate as a whole, and part of that could be part of the ARPA discussion. That's something we're going to have to look at the federal guidance on and see. I'm still, interested in overall tax cuts and tax relief. We have seen huge increases in both the general fund and the education trust fund budget. I think that that of course things also cost more for government to purchase, and our expenses as a government have gone up just like everybody else's have. But government will spend all that you give it, and one of the things I think we ought to do is seriously look in times where things are very flush at where we could do some targeted tax relief to help working Alabamians.
Yeah, I mean, like, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but the tax relief that we seem to have gotten over the years, and I'm not, you know, I'm not disparaging it, but it's either been targeted to some kind of business or something along those lines, or it's that we're not going to tax these federal benefits given to you that are our CARES Act or whatever, that they're meant to be stimulus. And a lot of lawmakers are saying, look, we do tax relief. Look at us. Look at us. And, I, you know, you look around the country, especially around the states that are bordering Alabama, and it doesn't seem to be the same approach here in this state as there is in Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, or Mississippi.
And I understand that frustration and agree with it to some extent. I will, first of all, say the small businesses, in my mind, those, as a small business owner myself, those are mom-and-pop businesses. And when you're able to provide tax relief and regulatory relief to small businesses, you are helping individuals, because those small businesses are absolutely run by individuals. And they are what makes our economy go, and they create wealth, not just for the business owners, but for individuals that work for them. They are the backbone, as folks say, of our economy. And I think that the tax relief that we were able to do last session that dealt with the business privilege tax, that deals with business personal property taxes, for instance, are huge steps in the right direction. But you are correct. I think we need to do more, and we need to look to our neighboring states to see some of the things that they have done. I still think that the grocery tax is something that we ought to look at. I had provided an amendment on one of the lottery bills that provided some grocery tax relief, and I have been supportive of that in the past. And I think that's the way to get real tax relief to the majority of people quickly and justifiably so.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Let's move on to the other big news of the week, bridge. The I-10 bridge specifically. I know that it could mean a number of things in our area, but the MPOs are on board as expected. It's the light has been, you know, it shows green now, moving ahead with it. Yeah, I guess okay with this ALDOT proposal.
I think okay is a great way to categorize it. You know, it still has some large question marks out there. On the funding side of things, that I don't think we've completely resolved yet. And I've said to other news outlets, and I'll say it here too, I think this project plan now gets what I would call the most improved award. It is so much better than what was there originally. You know, we don't have foreign ownership of the bridge or operating of the bridge anymore, which we were going to have with this public-private partnership. We don't have a profit motive that was going to exist with the public-private partnership. We have the state assuming a lot of the risk for whatever bond payments that are related to tolls, which if the private industry doesn't have to price in that risk, it lowers tolls. We have significant reductions in tolls across the board. We have significant incentives for locals that were not nearly as significant before. So, you know, all really headed in the right direction on this, and so much better. And I'm glad that the MPO, especially the Eastern Shore MPO, which I used to chair, really stood up to the state and said, your previous plan was not okay, and we would rather have no bridge than have what you're proposing, forcing the state really to come back and say, okay, what will you accept? What can we do? What is acceptable to the locals here? And I think that they've come up with a plan that is acceptable to the locals. And I think that is how an MPO is supposed to function. It has worked, and you know, our constituents will see the benefits from that process working for really the rest of our lives as we move forward with this project. So definitely, you know, credit to go around, and I'm pretty proud of the outcome.
Well, how do you feel about the longevity of the solution? You know, and you look at history. Going back to the last century, I mean, every 40, 50 years or so, we're having to deal with something different. You know, before the Wallace Tunnel, it was the Bankhead Tunnel was insufficient. Before that, the Cochrane Bridge was insufficient. Before that, you know, getting the causeway and the ferries. And do you think that this solution is going to be, I mean, obviously nothing's permanent, but a little more long-lasting than if 40 years from now, who knows where we'll be, but will we be looking at an additional bridge or back to the drawing board or whatever?
I do. I think we're going to continue to need to maintain the Wallace Tunnel and the Bankhead Tunnel, and this will be adding additional capacity on top of what is already existing there. It will move traffic much more efficiently than the methods we have right now, and I think that's beneficial. So all in all, I think this is one of those things that's going to be a solution for a very long period of time. You know, I can promise you one thing. The bridge height is not going to be a problem. I still think it's too high at 215 feet, higher than we need. But I don't see that being a problem. Certainly within this project's lifespan. And I think the elevation of the bridge deck, as much as it frustrates me that's being driven largely by the feds without a lot of federal funding going into the project, I think that it does virtually ensure that the bridge will structure will not be impacted by severe weather events, and that even if it is, there won't be anything around it anymore to service if we get something that bad. So I think the project's longevity is going to be there for a long time.
Well, you got to be excited. The Queen Anne or whatever super cruise ship could come into Mobile now. I mean, that's what we're looking at, right?
Well, I think the decision-making process that led to the bridge height determination was flawed. We are where we are. And the argument from Albot and other proponents, you know, really is that to go back in and make adjustments would save some money, but likely not save enough money to justify the delay in going back through the regulatory process, especially in these inflationary times. So you end up building something that you may not need, and it'll be more expensive than what you may need, but it will cost less than redesigning and going back through a regulatory process and enduring the inflationary pressures that would then make the cost go up even more, if that makes any sense. So it's a frustrating process, especially dealing with the federal government. But I think we're to a place where this is going to work out well for the locals. I'm going to continue to pursue some tax relief measures for those that are paying tolls, and certainly those that are commuting on a daily basis, to reimburse them for those costs, so that we're not putting an undue burden on our commuting families that are going back and forth to work every day.
How is your relationship on this issue with ALDOT Director John Cooper and Governor Ivey these days? I haven't asked you that in a while.
No, it's pretty good, I've spoken. I speak to Director Cooper pretty frequently. I saw him on Wednesday and spoke to him there, along with Chief Engineer, about this project. I mean, we've certainly been talking about it. It was tense there for a while. Obviously, they wanted to head in the direction of their old project with the $6 toll and the P3, and we ended up in a different place. But, you know, I think everybody went back to their corners, looked for wounds, and realized, okay, it's time to get back to work for the people of the state of Alabama and come up with a plan. And I think we're in that spot. Director Cooper and I both have constituencies to represent and jobs to do. And he and I are on good terms and working together.
And then finally, again, we talked about it last week on the program, but it keeps coming up on this program, at least among our listeners, the beach situation and getting that extra span on the toll bridge or doing something there. Always get asked to ask you about that. And, you know, what needs to happen next there, you think?
Something needs to happen there. And I will tell you, as a legislator, you know, my job, member of the Joint Transportation Committee, the way I see my job is to go find the funding for the project. And I'm pleased that the funding for either project, whatever adds additional lanes, is in the State Transportation Improvement Plan, and that funding is secured. Now the question is, can our local leadership, municipal leadership specifically, agree on a plan and convince ALDOT one way or the other which one is better? Nobody knows the traffic in Orange Beach better than Mayor Tony Kennett. Nobody knows the traffic better in Gulf Shores than Mayor Robert Kraft. And I think that if the two of them can get together on which bridge proposal, whether it's additional lanes on the toll bridge, again with a hefty discount for local folks, or if it's a entirely new bridge, additional two lanes in Gulf Shores, whichever one it was, will alleviate traffic. I just got to get those two to agree and get them to work with Aldot to make a decision on which one we're going to go with.
I mean, one of the things you hear is which is the most cost-effective approach, but I would argue this. You need to maybe not put such an emphasis on that, right, that this is a cash cow for the state. There's also public safety elements that it's more about finding not necessarily the most cost-effective fix, but the best fix, right?
I would agree with that. I think that, you know, when we start talking about the $8 billion that is business on the island, right, south of the intracoastal waterway, $8 billion, talking about an $80 million bridge one way or the other is almost chicken feed. But at the same time, it is real money, and that that is certainly it's certainly competitive around the state to receive that money. We just need to continue to make investments in our transportation infrastructure, especially in South Baldwin County, especially where tourists are coming to the state's beaches and leaving a ton of revenue for the rest of the state to divide up. We need to make sure we come to a consensus on the best way to do that. And whether or not it costs a little bit more one way or the other absolutely should not be a factor, in my opinion, on this this project determination.
Senator, we've got to leave it there. We're out of time. But as usual, we appreciate it, and we'll do this again next week.
Thanks, Jeff, for having me on. Y'all have a great weekend.
You do the same. Say, Senator Chris Elliott there. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Sweet potato pie, and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.